Revelation chapter 4, verse 1. After these things I looked, and behold, a door opened in heaven. I think one of the keys to understanding Revelation is to appreciate the original context. Here's John in exile on the island of Patmos, with the Christians being heavily persecuted, and they're looking, of course, for some comfort. And it seems that somehow God and Jesus are pretty silent. The opposition from the Jews and from the Romans is getting stronger. And God, where are you? Are you really not noticing what's happening? Are you not going to respond? And Revelation is, in its first context, an answer to those concerns. And so he sees this door open, which is like a sort of gives him a peep, as it were, into the heavenly throne room. Now, the court of heaven was a fairly common Jewish idea. You can see it alluded to a number of points in the Old Testament. The idea is that the events on earth are reflected there, and that everything that goes on earth, nations, Prince of Persia and Daniel, the believers and their persecutors, their supporters, all have their representative angels who stand before God and, as it were, enact the scene that's going on earth, and he gives his judgments. And so the door is opened in heaven. Well, that could be, you could reason that that's in response to a knock. But in any case, the opening of a door speaks, I think, of an opportunity provided. That is the way the term, the phrase, the metaphor is used. Though it could be that John and the others were desperately trying to understand life, understand their persecutions, and now this is the response. He's given a peek into what's really going on in heaven itself. And the first voice that I heard, as if a trumpet was speaking to me, was as one saying, "Come up here, and I'll show you the things which hereafter must come to pass." So he's saying, look, yes, things are going to happen. There is going to be a response. And the voice he hears is like the voice of a trumpet. And that's the word used in the Lord's Olivet prophecy in 1 Thessalonians 4 as well, about the sound or the voice of a trumpet, which will be heard at Christ's return. So I think that he is being given a picture of how things will ultimately be when the Lord returns. And so I was in the Spirit, verse 2, and I beheld a throne set in heaven, and one sitting upon the throne. Well, he would have immediately thought of Daniel 7, that finally, when the beasts have done all their persecution, a throne is set in the heavenly throne room at the last day. And what's going to happen is that that throne that is set now in heaven shall be set here upon earth. And he sees a person sitting upon the throne with a rainbow around the throne, the rainbow, of course, suggesting that divine judgment has now come to an end, and the faithful remnant, as Noah was in the ark, are going to be saved. So he's encouraged to see that, in fact, these things do have an end. And that is the comfort. The skeptic would say, but where's the comfort of that? I want it now. Well, yeah, that is the challenge of faith. Faith, if essentially means to trust, both in Hebrew and Greek, the words, the original words, have that sense. And the ultimate answer is, yes, the resolution will come at the coming of Jesus. Now, we live in a world that wants its answers right away, and that seems to think that justice must be done and seen to be done right now. Well, that is not God's view. That may be very unattractive to the modern mindset, but that is not God's view. His view is, sure, justice will be done and shall be seen to be done, but not now. For now, this is all a big test. The endurance of injustice and my apparent silence is to test and develop your faith. Well, verse 4, round about the throne are 24 thrones, with 24 elders sitting upon them with crowns of gold. Well, they recall, I suppose, the 24 orders of priests, and the idea is that the situation here on earth is reflected in heaven. There's the heavenly sanctuary. And then there are they're dressed in white garments with crowns of gold upon their heads. Well, here in Revelation 4 and in chapter 5, the picture of the heavenly throne room is really a take on the court of the Roman emperors, because the Roman emperors were considered to be divine, and their courtrooms were arranged also in these sort of concentric circles centering upon Caesar as the king, and their attendants Caesar's palace, as it were, in Caesar's throne room, were also arranged in groups of sevens and twelves after the supposed seven spheres of the planets and 12 signs of the zodiac. And you get this same idea in Revelation, groups of things in the heavenly courtroom in groups of sevens, twelves, 24s, that's 2 times 12. And just as they're all singing hymns of praise to Caesar, so here they're singing hymns of praise to the Lamb that's sitting upon the throne. And as Caesar gave justice, as he thought, to the empire by giving a scroll, well, chapter 5, you've got that. And when you look at the language that's used in Revelation, Son of God, the Lord's Day, Saviour of the world, all these kind of terms were used in the imperial cult, in the deification of Caesar, that is, treating Caesar as if he were God. Point is, God is saying that, yes, I realise there is an absolutely radical clash of culture. You are living in the Roman Empire. I understand that. And Caesar is Lord. That was the catch cry of the Roman Empire. Caesar is Lord. The Lord of the kings of the earth. But all this is actually nothing. I am actually the true king, and my son is the true son of God, not Caesar. And the real throne room is not there in Rome, it is in heaven. And you've been given a peek into it. And out of the throne there came lightnings, voices, and thunders, verse 5. Well, I think that these are all a foretaste, as it were, of the things which are going to happen in the last days, because later on in Revelation, you get the same ideas of lightnings in the last day, thunders, voices from heaven, all in the end times. And so the comfort was to the people like John, who were saying, look, what's going on? Does God realize? Yes, God does realize. And yet there are two realities. That's the message. That there's what seems to be going on this earth. Caesar is Lord. Roman Empire looked like it was going to last forever. But no, there is the true king and the real people who are controlling everything, who are the angels in heaven on God's behalf. And they are representing you. This is why the 24 elders, they are not the same as the believers, but they are the, if you like, the guardian angels of the believers. Yes, you are represented in the throne room of God himself. Your case, if you like, your situation in this world is represented there in heaven itself. But as I say, all this requires faith to perceive, and especially to accept that God is not going to immediately pull strings to bring about his kingdom right now. Of course, with all the faithful, we say, well, how long until? Sure, how long? But that is a desire which is structured into our experience by God to elicit our faith, our trust, that not now. It's not now. There are blessings now. I don't say there is no blessing. Sure, it's not all suffering and jam only tomorrow. There is a huge amount of blessing now. But in ultimate terms, the answer, the resolution to our living in this world of injustice that is absolutely against us is in the things of the last days, is in the things of the Lord's return and his ultimate judgment. But meantime, we are to believe in this peak that John gets into the throne room of heaven, that actually God is in control. That actually, in the end, he is absolutely sovereign in our lives, in the lives of the world. All world geopolitics are nothing compared to him and his power. It is an absolute comfort that he is king in heaven, that man is not alone, and our situations are known by him, and that he is actually orchestrating all things towards the point when Jesus shall return and God's kingdom shall be established, judgment will come upon all those that have abused us, and we shall then reign and rule on the earth.